This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
The headlines: the Yemeni army says it has launched missile and drone attacks on the Saudi capital Riyadh and warns of further retaliatory attacks. U.S. President Joe Biden defends his order for airstrikes in eastern Syria despite widespread criticism at home and abroad. And violence erupts during fresh protests in the Spanish city of Barcelona over the jailing of the Catalan singer on charges of insulting the monarchy. Hello and welcome. Your world news coming to you live from our headquarters in Tehran. My name is Gisum Shahmadi. Yemen's army says it conducted a large-scale drone and missile strike operation against sensitive targets in Saudi Arabia. Army spokesman Yahya Sari says ballistic missiles and over a dozen drones were used in the operation deep inside the kingdom. Sari said the overnight airstrikes hit targets in three sites, including those in the Saudi capital Riyadh and the southern city of Abha. Sari warned that the Saudi-led coalition operations against Saudi Arabia will continue and will expand until they lift their siege on Yemen. The attacks follow those on Abha airport less than a month ago. The Yemeni army frequently launches drone and missile attacks into Saudi Arabia. Yemenis say this is in retaliation for 5 years of Saudi-led aggression that has killed tens of thousands of Yemenis and pushed the country to the brink of famine. To discuss that further, we're joined by Hussein Al-Bukhaiti, activist and political commentator who is joining us live right now from Sana'a. Mr. Bukhaiti, if you could please give us more details regarding these strikes that are being carried out, and how does this send a message of might to the Saudis?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. We've seen in the latest statement from the spokesperson of Yemeni army in Sana'a. He has explained that this is the fifth, what's called retaliation operation against Saudi Arabia, and it shows in the details that he has released that I think it was one of the largest attack against Saudi Arabia, which they have used 15 drones, including and as well one ballistic missile type Dhulfiqar. They have targeted many areas in Saudi Arabia, like Riyadh, the Khamis Mushayt, Abha, Najran, and Jizan, and many army bases around Saudi Arabia and strategic target. And yesterday we have seen that airports like in Najran and in Jizan and in Khamis Mushayt and in Abha, including Riyadh, they have closed for several hours. They have directed many flights to other airports around those area. And this latest operation shows that Yemeni army and ballistic missile and drone unit here in Sana'a are well equipped to take this type of huge operation to target Saudi Arabia. And as well, on the same time, we have seen that the Yemeni army on the ground, they are so close to liberate Marib, one of the last and largest city under the control of the Saudi-backed forces in north of Yemen. And I think and I believe that this is a clear message to the United Nations, to the UN Security Council, to Biden administration, who have all of them have asked Sana'a to stop attacking Saudi Arabia, but we haven't seen any single condemnation against Saudi Arabia blockade and war against Yemen that have killed more than 300,000 Yemeni civilians because of the blockade, and about 18 to 19 Yemeni civilians were killed directly by Saudi airstrike. And I just want to mention, just yesterday, Saudi Arabia in retaliation of that major attack against Saudi Arabia, which hasn't killed a single civilian. This means that those targets that came under attack yesterday were military or targets that are being used by Saudi military for their operation in Yemen. But yesterday, Saudi conducted a strike on a home in Hodeidah city, killing 5 civilians and injuring other, four civilians from one family in Hodeidah city. And Hodeidah actually is protected by the Stockholm ceasefire agreement. But this show you that Saudi Arabia, actually, they have failed miserably on the ground. They have failed in all their military operation. And the only retaliation they can take is against Yemeni civilians by targeting them directly, like it happened yesterday in Hodeidah, or by tightening the blockade against Yemen. But today, the Sana'a government and as well the spokesperson of Yemeni army, General Yahya Sari', has insisted that attacks will continue against Saudi Arabia, and the only solution is for Saudi to stop its war, its strike, and its blockade. Anything that is that will not consist any of those three targets set by Sana'a, this means that attack will continue against Saudi Arabia.
Thank you very much, political analyst and activist Hussein Al-Bahati, joining us live from Sana'a. Moving on, U.S. President Joe Biden has sent a letter to Congress explaining his justification for Thursday's airstrikes in eastern Syria close to the Iraqi border. In the letter, Biden said aerial raids were carried out in self-defense, adding that they meant to protect U.S.-led forces in Iraq against rocket attacks. The attack targeted the positions of Iraqi counterterrorism forces. The U.S. has time and again blamed Iraqi resistance groups for targeting American missions and forces. The assault on Syria was the first of its kind under the new U.S. administration. However, it has been criticized by some Democrats in the U.S. Congress. The raid also sparked international condemnation. International human rights lawyer Edward Corrigan says Biden's justification is senseless and the attack on Syria is an act of aggression.
You know, Joe Biden describes this as, you know, self-defense. If this is self-defense, then I'd like to sell you some land on the moon, because this is not self-defense. This is an act of aggression. But also, it doesn't make sense because the people they attacked are actually fighting, you know, Daesh, the Islamic State, which were the most effective forces fighting the Islamic State, as are these other groups. Iran and Iraq and Syria have all been fighting the Islamic State. The United States says they fight it, but when you look at what they do, they keep bombing the Syrians, keep bombing the Iraqis. They assassinate the, you know, General Soleimani and other leaders that have been actually the most effective in fighting the Islamic State. So it really rips off the cover. It shows the United States is using and supporting ISIS and Daesh. The Americans are, you know, are punching, and I guess Biden is sending a message. But, you know, I don't know what sort of message is going to be sent by the military forces and popular mobilization units in Iraq and other organizations and units that are fighting Daesh. But the United States seems to be trying to reestablish Daesh in the area to give them a pretext to stay in the area. They're illegally in Syria. They're building a military base there, and they're stealing oil. Mm-hmm. All of these things make no sense, and in fact, they're are clearly illegal under international law.
Now, Syria calls on the United Nations Security Council to take measures to stop what it calls U.S. acts of aggression against the Arab country. In a letter addressed to the U.N. Secretary General and President of the Security Council, the Syrian Foreign Ministry condemned the recent U.S. airstrikes on Iraqi anti-terror resistance groups on the Syrian border. The ministry warned that such actions can escalate tensions in the region. The U.S. attack also drew condemnations from the director of Iran's Supreme National Security Council. Ali Shamkhani slammed the raid as an act of organized terrorism aimed at boosting Daesh terrorists. Shamkhani made the remarks during a meeting with a visiting Iraqi foreign minister, Fuad Hussein. Fresh protests are held in the Spanish city of Barcelona as the unrest over the jailing of Catalan singer Pablo Hasél shows no sign of abating. Protesters vandalized shops and banks and set trash bins on fire. Police made 10 arrests. Hasél was arrested last week and sentenced to 9 months in jail on charges of glorifying terrorism and insulting the Spanish monarchy in his songs and tweets. The arrest has sparked a debate on the freedom of expression in the country. Iran has started the clinical trial of its domestically developed coronavirus vaccine. Two volunteers received a Razi-Cov Pars vaccine doses during a ceremony attended by government officials in Tehran. A total of 133 volunteers were gradually received these injections during the first human trial stage. The results will be analyzed and reported to the health ministry. Cov Pars, developed at Iran's Razi Vaccine and Serum Research Institute, is administered both through injection and inhalation. This is the second indigenously developed COVID vaccine currently under clinical trial. The achievement comes as the country faces difficulties in importing COVID vaccines due to U.S. sanctions. Now, the United States has approved a third coronavirus vaccine for emergency use days after the death toll from the pandemic in the country topped 500,000. The Food and Drug Administration said the single-shot Johnson & Johnson vaccine is highly effective at preventing severe COVID cases. That is amid concerns over the vaccine's only 72% efficacy in clinical trials. The figure falls significantly short of the earlier approved vaccines that have over 90% efficacy. President Joe Biden has, however, hailed the approval of the new vaccine as exciting news, but he warned against Americans letting their guard down. COVID-19 has infected an average 69,000 people in the U.S. over the past week. That is a plateau authorities are trying to break with new jabs. The U.S. remains the world's worst hit country by the pandemic, both in terms of infections and deaths. Meanwhile, Brazil's health ministry reports over 1,300 new coronavirus deaths for the fifth day in a row. The country also registered nearly 62,000 infection cases over the past day. Brazil has suffered an enduring second wave since November, and infection rates have not begun to fall. The country imposed lockdown measures in the capital city, Brasilia, to combat the surge in cases. According to official data, the country has so far registered more than 10.5 million infections since the pandemic began, with nearly 255,000 deaths. Elsewhere in Latin America, Mexico logged over 750 new fatalities, raising its total death toll to over 185,000. Meanwhile, in Argentina, thousands of people took the streets of Buenos Aires to protest a VIP vaccine scandal that has shaken up the government. Demonstrators banged pots and pans in front of the presidential palace and carried signs reading, quote, "Give me back my vaccine, and vaccines should not be a privilege." Last week, it was revealed that a dozen people have been able to use connections to get access to COVID-19 vaccines. Argentina's total coronavirus infections surpassed the 2 million mark last week. The country has also logged more than 50,000 COVID-19 deaths since the pandemic began. EU leaders express concern over the spread of COVID-19 variants within the 27-nation bloc amid criticism that vaccines are being administered too slowly. The handling of the pandemic in the EU is contributing to economic uncertainty and social inequality. Jerome Hughes reports.
Like millions of other young people in the EU, Charles Prevot feels he has not been given adequate support by authorities during the pandemic. In order to survive, the entrepreneur has purchased his own hot dog stand, which he operates in Brussels.
I was working on a restaurant. I was managing a restaurant and I lost my job and I was like, what I can do? What I can do next? What we can do? What the young people, the young men, the young ladies in this world, in this city, in this country, what they can do, because we don't have any help.
As businesses continue to fold in the EU and millions lose their jobs, people feel there is no hope. Only 6.4% of the bloc's population have received a vaccine. That's tiny compared to the UK and US. A two-day video conference involving EU leaders has just concluded. They are very concerned about COVID-19 mutations.
The B.1.1.7 is by now in all member states but one. The South African variant is in 14 member states and the Brazilian variant in 7. So there's a lot of challenge ahead of us.
Variants are allowed to flourish when people are not vaccinated. Experts say the bureaucratic structures of the EU have resulted in citizens having to wait far too long for vaccines. However, EU leaders say producers are not keeping their promises in terms of supply.
We want more predictability and transparency to ensure that pharmaceutical companies comply with their commitments.
Health officials warn mixed messages from EU leaders about the efficacy of the Oxford-AstraZeneca vaccine are making citizens reluctant to take the jab. Two other vaccines have been approved here, but supply remains a big problem. A fourth vaccine from Johnson & Johnson is likely to be approved next month. During their summit, EU leaders talked at length about the importance of developing certificates to show people have been vaccinated in order to open up travel. Commentators are describing this as laughable, saying it is putting the cart before the horse, given the current state of play with respect to the rollout of vaccines. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
One person is killed and several wounded in Myanmar as police crack down on protesters to end weeks of demonstrations against the February 1st military coup. A protester was reportedly killed after the police opened fire on demonstrators in the town of Dawei, according to witnesses. The police also threw stun grenades, used tear gas, and fired into the air to disperse the protesters in the city of Yangon. The latest fatality brings to four the number of anti-coup protesters killed so far. Myanmar was thrown into chaos when the army seized power and detained elected government officials, including de facto leader Aung San Suu Kyi. The military claims the November election, in which Suu Kyi's party won with a landslide, was rigged. The coup has drawn condemnation from many countries. In Bangladesh, hundreds of people have taken part in a second day of protests in the capital, Dhaka, over the death of a prominent writer in prison. Protesters marched at the University of Dhaka to condemn the government's treatment of Mushtaq Ahmed, as well as other dissident activists. They also demanded officials scrap the Digital Security Act under which Ahmed was detained last May. Meanwhile, Prime Minister Sheikh Hasina shrugged off criticism of her government, saying that the law was taking its own course. This comes after clashes broke out between demonstrators and security forces in the capital on Friday night. Police said six people were arrested, while activists said at least 30 protesters were injured. And now, with that, we come to the end of this edition of World News. Stay tuned.
A diverse range of programs.
spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Could you tell a little about yourself?
I'm Eric Shimanandi from India.
I was born actually in London, England.
I'm a journalist by profession.
I'm 20 years old and I'm a student of physics. My dad, who taught me the art of writing.
Listeners special.
In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful. Salam, dear listeners, and welcome to this week's edition of Listeners Special on this beautiful Sunday, February 28, 2021. I'm Atefa Erfani, hosting this program today. Listeners Special, as you may know, is the Sunday program where your views are presented through emails and letters. So please contact us and tell us what you think about our broadcast. Tell us your views. Or if you have any messages for our dear listeners around the world, then record your voice, send it to us, and get your voice heard. Remember, dear listeners, Listeners Special is your program. It's your views that are important. As usual, many of you have taken the trouble of sending us reception reports. These reception reports are very important to us, especially to our technicians and engineers. These reception reports, as you may know, enable us in IRIB English Radio to provide a better service to our listeners throughout the world. All of you who have sent in a reception report will be receiving a QSL card from us in normal days. I mean, these days, with the outbreak of coronavirus around the world, please don't expect a QSL card from IRIB English Radio. However, my colleagues are working on eQSL cards for you, dear listeners. As you may know, sending any material, including IRIB souvenirs, on behalf of our radio is temporarily halted due to the pandemic. So please be patient until we get back to normal life, and then we will send you paper QSL cards and other items. And here I truly appreciate those of our dear listeners who have kindly sent us reception reports, including N. Arun Kumar from India, Vlad Vinogradov from Russia, and Valentin Bradatino from Romania. And Arun, Vlad, and Valentin, we want you to know how much we value your support and commitment to IRIB English Radio. And our deepest and sincerest thanks to those of our listeners who have kindly sent us letters and emails from around the world, which I mentioned some of their names here, and later during the program, I will read their emails and letters, including Mr. Najimuddin from India,
Also, Sultan Mahmoud Sarkar from Bangladesh has sent us an email. Alejandro Filimonchak from Argentina has sent us an email. And from Sweden, we have an email from Jan Thornblom, one of our regular listeners. And also, Ivan Rodiono from Germany has sent us an email. Dear listeners, please stay with us until the end of the program. I will be back with all these kind messages after the music. Welcome back. First of all, we start this part of our program with an email from Mr. Najimuddin from India. Mr. Najimuddin from India says, Dear IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum. Greetings to all of you from International DX Radio Listeners Club members. We found your program very interesting and informative. We regularly listen to your wonderful program and visit your informative web pages. We must say that you are doing such a nice job in keeping us all informed about the various events taking place in the world through the program by radio and web pages. The fact is that whenever we need to know about the Islamic Republic of Iran and its various related things, IRIB English Radio becomes the best choice and a nice way to get the information. Also, I would like to say that your website and programs are a very nice source of information, entertainment, and knowledgeable. Keep up the good work. Salam, Mr. Najmuddin from India. And you, please accept our deep thanks for writing this email to IRIB English Radio. And also, we appreciate you for telling us your views about IRIB English Radio programs as well as the website. And also, as you noted, whenever there is the need to know about Iran and its developments, it's better to refer to IRIB source rather than trusting the Western media, which try to portray a false image about Iran. So thank you for writing to IRIB English Radio. Send our greetings to your club members and write to us soon, Mr. Najimuddin from India. Also, from Bangladesh, we have an email from Sultan Mahmoud Sarkar. Sultan Mahmoud Sarkar from Bangladesh says, Hello, dear IRIB English Radio. At first, take my salam from Bangladesh. Hope you are well. I listened to the listeners' special program and liked it very much. I was especially happy to receive a reply to my letter. Also, the greetings of the listeners from all over the world on the occasion of the World Radio Day were very beautiful. I strongly believe that the Islamic Republic of Iran speaks for the oppressed people around the world. Iran is the only country that has the power to challenge any arrogant country like the United States. This has been possible only because of their faith in God. I wish you all good health and prosperity, all the best. And salam from Iran to Sultan Mahmoud Sarkar from Bangladesh. I truly appreciate you for writing this email to IRIB English Radio. Yes, we reply to all our listeners' letters and emails in our program, listeners' special, the Sunday program. And we, in IRIB English Radio, really value the commitment and support of our dear listeners. And your view about the role of Iran is respectable and valued. Thank you very much. Sultan Mahmoud Sarkar from Bangladesh, good luck and tons of best wishes. We are looking forward to hearing from you very soon in the future. Dear listeners, after a short break, I will be back with other emails and letters from our dear listeners from around the world. Stay tuned. Thank you. welcome back. The pieces of music that you hear during the program are all Iranian traditional music. We hope you enjoy them. From Argentina, we have an email from Alejandro Filimonchak. Alejandro says, hi from Buenos Aires. I could hear your transmission a few days ago from 2020 35 to 2020 50 UTC. I attached an audio clip sample, and I hope you can verify it for a QSL card. The reception was good, with a lot of noise, but overall it was good. Thank you very much, and I'm waiting for a verification from your respectful radio station, IRIB English Radio. God bless you all. Salam and greetings to you, Alejandro Filimonchak from Argentina. We are really grateful for writing this email to IRIB English Radio, and thank you for contacting Radio IRIB English Radio. It seems that you've already received IRIB English Radio signals. However, you mentioned that your reception was good, but accompanied by a lot of noise. What a pity. Alejandro, it was such a pleasure to receive this email from you, from Argentina. In your upcoming emails and letters, Alejandro, tell us your views about our broadcast. Good luck, and please stay in touch with IRIB English Radio. Also, this time from Sweden, we have an email from Jan Thornblom, who is one of our regular listeners. Jan Thornblom says, dear producer, thank you for your nice email and for your interest in my opinion. I think it's a great idea to switch to answering reception reports with email QSL. It also saves a lot of money for you. Best regards from Sweden. Salam, Jan Thornblom from Sweden. It seems that Jan Thornblom is addressing our producer, which has answered, which is kind of reply about, a suggestion actually to sending our dear listeners eQSL cards in the time of coronavirus pandemic. Jan Thornblom from Sweden, thanks for your consideration, and please accept our sincerest gratitude for your suggestion about sending eQSL cards, which our dear colleagues are producing to send you in the future. Jan Thornblom from Sweden, write to us very soon and speak about your views about IRB English radio programs. Dear listeners, what about a short break? Welcome back. Here we have an email from Germany. This email is from Ivan Rodionov. Ivan says, dear the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting, today I received your station on my receiver here in Germany. Unfortunately, my English is quite poor, so I was unable to understand much in terms of content. There were some prayers followed by news program. Background music choice was good but a bit loud. Overall, not bad content. I'm waiting for your response, and please send me either a QSL or paper QSL card to my address. Salam and greetings to you, Ivan Rodionov from Germany. We really appreciate your taking time to listen to IRIB English Radio and also writing this text to our radio. Anyway, you said your English is quite poor, but we hope you improve it, and then you can listen to the content and you understand the content of IRIB English Radio programs. Though, we have also IRIB German Radio, and then you can switch to that radio maybe sometime. But we hope you can improve your English and listen to IRIB English Radio either. Anyway, You can also refer to our website at www.parcelday.com/en and use the content there. Anyway, as your request about sending eQSL or paper QSL card, as you may know, in the time of coronavirus pandemic, sending any material, including paper QSL card, to our dear listeners around the world is forbidden and halted, actually, temporarily, due to international protocols. But our colleagues are preparing eQSL cards for our dear listeners in the near future, of course. Ivan Rodionov from Germany, write to us soon and tell us your views about IRIB English radio programs. Dear listeners, after a short break, I will be back. And here we come to the end of this week's edition of Listener's Special. Please keep in touch and have a good time.
Listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We'll be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send your emails to EnglishRadio@irib.ir. That is one word, EnglishRadio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at www.parstoday.com/en. Our phone number is 00982122013720. Once again, our phone number is 00982122013720. Our profile is also in Facebook. Our address is www.facebook.com/pasttodayenglish. Thank you all for being with IRIB English Radio.
The debate.
Hello and welcome to Debate. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. Almost 2.5 years after the brutal murder of dissident journalist Jamal Khashoggi, the U.S. has released a report pointing the finger at the Saudi crown prince for the responsibility of the gruesome dismemberment. What does this mean for Mohammed bin Salman, and what will it mean for Saudi Arabia? Well, according to the Biden administration so far, it means not to rupture relations, but to recalibrate between Washington and Riyadh. What does this mean? Well, stay with us as we take a look at this and a lot more on The Debate.
The U.S. has finally released a long-awaited report on the gruesome murder of Jamal Khashoggi, confirming that the Crown Prince had personally approved an operation to capture or kill him. Accordingly, the U.S. says it has imposed sanctions against Saudi Arabia over the murder. However, Washington's restrictions only target members of the Saudi Royal Guard's Rapid Intervention Force, not their patron and commander, Mohammed bin Salman. That once again exposes Washington's double standard in dealing with criminals, despite its own intelligence assessment that Khashoggi was killed and his body dismembered at the behest of bin Salman in the Saudi consulate in Istanbul in 2018. The UN has reacted to the CIA report, saying the U.S. fails to take practical steps to hold the main culprit accountable.
With the release of the U.S. report confirming Saudi officials' culpability at the highest levels, the United States should now take the lead in ensuring accountability for this crime and for setting in place the international mechanisms to prevent and punish such acts in the future. The United States government should impose sanctions against the Crown Prince as it has done for the other perpetrators, targeting his personal assets but also his international engagements.
Reactions are also pouring in from other authorities and legal experts who have dismissed the U.S. report as too little, too late.
This is not enough. The Crown Prince needs to face accountability. He needs to face sanctions, asset freezes, travel bans.
Analysts are also criticizing the White House for failing to take the Saudi Crown Prince to account.
Nobody saw the actual report until now, and yes, it's confirmed that indeed, as the Saudis say, a rogue operative was responsible, and that rogue is bin Salman himself.
Many believe Washington's failure to hold bin Salman accountable is due to its interests. Even the U.S. itself has admitted that it is seeking its own interests in maintaining a close partnership with Riyadh.
I would say the relationship with Saudi Arabia is an important one. We have significant ongoing interests. We remain committed to the defense of the kingdom. And so what we've done by the actions that we've taken is really not to rupture the relationship, but to recalibrate it.
In fact, decades-old U.S.-Saudi nexus have benefited the both, with Riyadh spending its petrodollars for American arms and Washington hatching plots to destabilize the region for its own sake. The U.S. backing for the Saudi regime's deadly mayhem in Yemen over the past 5 years is part of such plots. If the new U.S. administration claims that it really wants to break with the policies of the Trump government, it should walk the walk rather than talk the talk and stop supporting the al-Saud regime that has a long history of malign disregard for not only its own citizens like Khashoggi, but even the impoverished people like Yemenis.
I'd like to welcome my guests to this debate, journalist and political analyst Elijah Magnier out of Brussels and a writer and journalist John White out of Edinburgh. Thank you both for being with us. Well, let's start it off in Brussels. And Elijah, I mean, we assess that Saudi Arabia's crown prince, Mohammed bin Salman, has approved an operation in Istanbul, Turkey, to capture or kill Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi. Now, this is from the office of the U.S. Director of National Intelligence. Your assessment of their finding and what should be the results?
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming.
First of all, I think what the U.S.
Elijah, stay with me. I'm so sorry, Elijah. We're going to try to work on. We're having some
of Khashoggi. Okay. They're doing nothing against Saudi Arabia, who are responsible for bombing Yemen every single day. It is not a humanitarian issue. It's a public relation issue that Biden.
Okay, my apologies for the audio difficulties. Hopefully, we can take care of that. Now, John, your perspective. I mean, Elijah said that basically it means nothing. Your take on what the U.S. says, the statement about recalibrating. I mean, what does recalibrating mean when we're talking about relations, when we're talking about a situation like this?
Well, Marsha, good evening. It's nice to be with you.
Nice to have you.
There are times when the truth is not enough and when only the unvarnished truth will do. And the unvarnished truth when it comes to Saudi Arabia is that this is less a country and more a family business whose primary business is murder. And in the case of Mr. Khashoggi, we are talking murder most foul. This gentleman was lured to the Saudi consulate in Istanbul on the premise of receiving divorce papers he required to marry his then fiancée. He received no divorce papers, but his head was divorced from his body. His body was dismembered, put in bags, and his remains have never been found. And to talk about recalibrating, as the man behind this operation, is to prize the gesture over the deed. We know, everybody knows, that geostrategic and economic interests supersede humanitarian issues when it comes to the US and its various interests around the world.
I mean, John, how is it that a resident of the United States really can be cut to pieces and the main culprit not be held responsible by Washington? We know that this happens, but it is quite amazing that they continue to get away with these type of abuses.
Because, as I just said, geostrategic and economic reality supersede humanitarian issues when it comes to the U.S. and its various allies, so-called, around the world.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the thing. The U.S. cannot continue to play the humanitarian card and then allow these monstrous states such as Saudi Arabia, the most repressive state in the world today, along with that other sectarian monstrosity, Israel, to get away with murder, with the violations of international law on a daily basis, and maintain its supposed role as the leader of the so-called free world. And today, on the back of this report, on the back of the inaction based on this report, the banner of human rights, which the US has never done, waving in the face of a world that feels it is divinely ordained to dominate, lies in tatters.
So, John, why do you think that the US even released this report at this time?
That's a difficult one, actually, because it is embarrassing that on the back of a report which names MBS, Mohammed bin Salman, as the man who ordered this operation to either kidnap or murder, I would suggest murder, Mr. Jamal Khashoggi, that why would they come out with this report and then talk about recalibration? Joe Biden came into office promising to reset U.S. relations and to reassert U.S. Leadership in the world as part of a multilateral coalition of the willing. But he's now shown that this is a case of meet the new boss, same as the old boss. He's just done bombing Syria just a month after coming into office. And now this is a humiliating reverse and embarrassment, and it does nothing to sustain the US reputation in the world. Not just among its allies, but among the people of the world, people like us, who understand the sheer hypocrisy of this policy and of this inaction towards MBS.
How do you think that's going to affect the U.S. in general, John? You just talked about the sheer hypocrisy of it all. On the one hand, when the United States talks about human rights and defending human lives, and then we see one of their closest allies, basically, on the one hand, they've said that MBS is responsible. On the other hand, not holding him responsible at all. So tell me about the credibility of Washington itself and how it's affected.
Well, its credibility was not very great before this, and this is going to do it more damage, especially because, as I say, the Biden administration promised to reset U.S. Relations with the rest of the world after 4 years of Trump's dysfunctionality. This just shows you that any U.S. administration, regardless of who the president is presiding over an empire and acts as an emperor over that empire with a democratic integument. So democracy is placed to one side conveniently when geostrategic and economic interests demand that it is. Why does the U.S. think it has any leg to stand on when it comes to lecturing Iran or Cuba or Venezuela or Russia or China on human rights when some of its closest allies are the most grievous violators of human rights on the planet and in the history of the planet?
Well, we're trying to reestablish connection with Elijah. We're having some audio difficulty. Hopefully we will get that taken care of. But staying with you, John, now former U.S. President Donald Trump has called Saudi Arabia a milk cow. Is it possible that Washington wants to get even more out of the Saudis, and this is why the report has even been released?
Well, look, Western governments, the U.S. prime among them, also the U.K. and France, are based themselves at the feet of the Saudi kleptocracy because of arms sales, because of security contracts. The U.K. and the U.S. and France have been directly involved in the genocidal conflict against Yemen that has been driven by the Saudis since 2015. Thousands and thousands of civilians killed. Civilians being killed as I speak. Humanitarian crisis. Amnesty International has called this the most dangerous and the worst humanitarian crisis in the world today. No action is taken. Nothing meaningful is done to hold this monstrosity of a sectarian state, as I mentioned, to any kind of account. And it really does suggest that we're now living in a world of gangsterism, rather than international law or any norms of diplomacy.
Okay, we have Elijah joining us by phone, though. Elijah, sorry about the technical difficulties. Now, Elijah, in your perspective, what does this say about international rule of law when a high-ranking official of a country is proven to have ordered such a brutal murder and then not be held responsible for it?
Because they think they can get away with it because they have the money and the Americans are in need of their money, not their oil. Saudi Arabia has been paying whatever amount Barack Obama wanted after him, Donald Trump, and now they will pay to Biden. And if Biden is saying Mohammed bin Salman is responsible for the killing, but we are putting sanction on the team that he has sent, that they are part of his personal protection team, it's a mockery. And it is a clear violation of the international law. And we don't need to repeat it again and again and again. The U.S. are careless about the international law. They've never respected it. They don't do it in Yemen. They don't do it in Iraq. They don't do it in Syria. They still occupy Syria. So what they are doing is a kind of a public relations move that Biden is in need of to come out and then after 100 days in power to say, I have achieved something and I have satisfied the mainstream media that are looking for some condemnation to Saudi Arabia, but they use the word, we are recalibrating. So they're trying to really insult our intelligence and make fun of us by saying they're recalibrating by putting sanction on the team that is responsible for the assassination and not by the person who gave the order. And this report has been in the hands of the Congress since a very long time, and Trump refused to publish it, and now Biden is publishing it, but he's not publishing the real report that the CIA got and that Turkey has and collaborated, and all the communication between Riyadh and the consulate, Saudi consulate. So we're not talking about human rights, we're talking about something that Biden needs to throw in the eyes of the mainstream media to say, I have given you the piece of meat that you are looking for, you can eat it now and go away. And I can continue my policy that is exactly the same as Donald Trump, as every U.S. administration, but with more intelligence and with less talking.
Well, Elijah, staying with you, I mean, when the de facto ruler of a country acts against international law and is ordering such a gruesome murder, shouldn't the whole regime be held responsible? And why aren't we seeing sanctions, not just from the United States, but what about the United Nations? Where's the United Nations in all of this?
Well, we live in a world where it is a cherry picking, and we live in a world where the strongest dominate, and we live in a world that if you don't stand to your right and you look for how you impose your rules, then other countries will eat you up. The United Nations is a tool in the hands of the U.S. Europe is in a tool in the hands of the U.S. Therefore, the U.S. decides who is against the international law, when he is or this country is against the international law. It depends when it's suitable for them and therefore their foreign policy. And that has been the case since always.
Well, John, I mean, when we see terrorism is ignored like this and goes unpunished, I mean, what is the likely outcome? Doesn't it simply give credence to a rogue state and encourages it even more to participate in other illegalities?
Well, the world you live in, Marcia, is a world mired in crisis, an economic crisis that evinces no sign of dissipating anytime soon. The contradictions of a world in which the tectonic plates of geopolitical power have been shifting have been accelerated by COVID, and this is a desperate U.S. administration, a U.S. empire trying to sustain its leadership and its hegemony, which is now being seriously challenged on a strategic level by Russia and on an economic and growing strategic level by China. The Middle East has always been seen as a U.S. backyard, and it no longer is, and that's why it has to cling on to its alliance with the Saudis and the Israelis, regardless of what they do. And they understand that in the dynamic of this relationship and this alliance, they now have the key card. They have the whip hand, because they know the US is desperate to maintain its dissipating influence in this strategically and geostrategically crucial region of the world. So this is going to go on. The Saudis will get a free pass. The Israelis will get a free pass for their ongoing crimes against the Palestinian people. And the peoples of the world look on aghast at how the rule of law is being replaced by the rule of the gun, or in the case of this murder, the rule of the bone saw. There's an old saying, wrong forever on the throne, truth forever on the scaffold. I can think of no other way to describe the world we live in today.
Hmm. Elijah, your thoughts? I mean, there are international calls to hold the Saudi Crown Prince MBS responsible. Do you think that eventually justice will be served, and what will it take for us to get there?
I don't think as long as the U.S. is in control of most of the Middle East, there's going to be justice. There is no justice in the Middle East by the U.S. What the U.S. is doing, U.S. is occupying Iraq, U.S. is occupying Syria, U.S. is bombing the Iraqi-Syrian borders where the troops are fighting ISIS. Is that justice? I mean, when the Americans are occupying the economy, they're crippling the economy of Syria, starving population. They are imposing sanctions on Iran and starving the population. On Venezuela, they're going everywhere doing the same thing. That is not justice. We don't live in a world of justice. We live in a jungle where the strong impose its will on the weak. And Iran has managed to stand up to the U.S. Now it is up to Iraq to do the same. Lebanon is trying to do the same. But if we are waiting for justice coming from the U.S., particularly towards Saudi Arabia, where we haven't seen anything on Yemen. On Yemen, they just said, we are going to stop the support of Saudi Arabia in supplying bombs, but we are going to allow our allies to do so. So nothing is happening. And when the Houthis bombed one location in Saudi Arabia, the whole world stands up. And when the Saudis prevent 14 ships from reaching Yemen and allow the population to starve, then the world is silent. What are you talking about? You're looking for justice. There is no justice.
Indeed, a sample of the world we live in today. I appreciate both of you being with us on this debate. Journalist and political analyst Elijah Macnia out of Brussels, and writer and journalist John White of Edinburgh. And as always, we appreciate you being with us on another debate. I'm Marzia Hashimi, signing out for myself and all the people right here in Tehran.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/EM.